When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to talk to you about rotoballer.com. If you guys know me by now, you've listened long enough, you know I have my written content for DFS and other season-long fantasy products over at rotoballer.com. And if you're still grinding along in the NFL streets, season-long playoffs, DFS for the NFL, don't wait any longer. Go to rotoballer.com, get the NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? Rotoballer's NFL Premium Pass includes lineup tools, projections, and DFS cheat sheets for all formats. Get access to exclusive articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chat rooms. I do the weekly DFS cash game values, even then this Saturday even, doing some extra previews for the week's DFS slates. Come check all that out and join in on the winning and take 50% off any premium pass, not just football. If you want basketball, baseball's coming up, all that good stuff. 50% off any premium pass. Use my promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off. So you get 60% off a premium pass. It's that simple. So get in, get ready, finish the NFL season in a strong, strong way with rotoballer.com, NFL Premium Pass. Already at 50% off now. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off when you purchase. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 425. Got a special guest returning to the show, friend of mine. I talk to him probably more than most people on Twitter that I talk to, not in general. The text message threads are always very entertaining. Got to meet this wonderful individual in First Pitch, Arizona, where I gave him as much crap as he could handle, and he took it like a champ because that's what he does. You can find his work at skplaybook.com, the Bases Loaded podcast with the one and only Jorge Montanez. And rotoballer.com, Mr. Sleepy K himself, Mike Curlin. How are we doing, my friend?
What's going on, man? And yes, I do consider you a friend, and you are correct. There are few true friends you may make here on the Twitterverse, but you are one of them, and yep. I thank you for having me on, as always.
Yes, always, always. And like I told Mike before we recorded, I apologize if you guys hear background stuff. I have a full house because it was supposed to be empty. It is not empty. So if you hear noises, I apologize, but this is the world we live in these days. But how are we doing? We got drafts going on. You suckered me into a draft champions right before the holiday, like right before Christmas. It was wild times. How are we doing?
You're blaming me when you tweet. I actually reached out to you saying, hey, did you ever get into this draft that you were thinking about doing? You said, no, it filled. I said, well, there's a new one. All I did was suggestively sell, essentially, because I was going to get I wanted to get into one. I like drafting with friends. I do. Yep. Even though I'm pretty open about my player analysis and who I like in drafts, especially to people I'm close to, I don't mind drafting with that because with those people, and I prefer to. I enjoy the camaraderie. I enjoy the trash talk, and I enjoy taking your money.
Oh, the last part. Yeah, okay, we'll see about that. Just remember, you got to remember to set your lineups each week. So we'll get to that.
Yeah,
part.
No quitting again midseason. Come on, yeah, man.
No quitting midseason.
No mental breakdowns again. Damn it.
No, we can't be doing that. But
so
before we talk about these drafts and kind of what we're learning early on here. Let everybody know what you got going on, SK Playbook. You've been writing, doing your stuff. You're getting your draft prepped going and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. It's a new venture. Shocker, curling with a new venture. Yeah. But
let's see how long this one sticks.
No, I'm hyper-focused. No, dude, my wife gives me a hard time. Anybody who knows me and is close to me knows that I tend to jump from project to project. But I think I finally found my happy place. I really do. I haven't been this excited about something in a while, and I'm doing it without a care. And, you know, again, as someone who texts with me pretty much daily, and we talk about this stuff because we relate to each other, like, in this type of thing. You knew the hardest part was going to be me doing essentially writing for free again. Like, that's what I'm doing. And it's all just gambling on myself. And I'm like, I kind of liked it. Like, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. I'm not getting paid for this work. I'm paying to do stuff, essentially. And the more I look into it, the more I'm like, yeah, I just want to do this. And George, again, our buddy Jorge Montanez, he's a great dude. George, man.
Yeah,
George. He's been my day one guy. He's been my co-host since day one on Bases Loaded. And we're going to co-own this thing and kind of just go that route and see what happens. Now, George is still obviously with NBC doing his thing, so I'm hyper focused on this, but I'm gonna bring all my content here. I'm kind of focusing on more of a niche concept versus having all your typical content. So you mentioned my player analysis. I tend to do like some deeper dive type articles, and those are, I already have like 3 or 4 done on there. I'm gonna bring all my lineup content to the site, and I'm just gonna kind of hone in on it. And I have other ideas, and I think I'm gonna do something stupid and just, of course, instead of taking my time with it, I'm going to rush to do bigger things than I probably should right away, but we'll see what happens. I have some ideas in the works, but skplaybook.com is where my work is at, and majority of my work is going to be. I will be freelancing for other sites. You mentioned Rotoballer being one of them. But yeah, that's pretty much all things CBK, all things Mike Kurland are going to be all things SK Playbook, essentially.
And he's also got the SP Streamer draft guide coming out.
Man, don't plug Mike's work or stuff. Stop it.
Well, it's already been plugged on other podcasts.
Before, yes, so okay. It's because Simeone is his own walking brand. He's a great dude. I can't knock him, but man, do I like to give him a hard time.
Yep. It's fun. It's just fun because he is too nice. So it's fun to poke him a little bit. And
he's genuinely nice. Like, yeah. I'm not just like, I'm the jerk.
that's your foray. So it works pretty understatement. Well for you. But yeah, go check out skplaybook.com. Mike always has great stuff. That's one thing I give him a hard time at when he does a project and stops. I'm like, dude, this stuff's good. What are you doing? But it's his passion. So if he's found his wheelhouse, I would definitely check it out, guys, because it'll be good. And obviously the lineup stuff we all love as the season goes along. Let's talk early drafts. We've been going. We did the FPAS draft. Like you said before the show, we were talking. I haven't even looked at it because I'm scared to look at it because it's just like so much has changed since then. We all went in there. We were in the lobby of the hotel printing out just any list we could find beforehand because we had no idea. We just wanted a player pool in front of us. It was just a total, let's throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. But now we're cranking up. We're actually putting dollars behind this. We've been doing research. We're almost into the 2022 actual year and / season. So what are some of the early things you're seeing that stand out to you that you see maybe sticking or something?
Man,
are you relievers early? You think that's going to stay?
That's the one that's – I mean, if it's already here, I don't see it falling off. Now, maybe if we do get a few more names, like, okay, they say, hey, Giles is the guy, or hey, Steckenrider is the guy, or, you know, once we, like, we're already seeing player, but the thing is, those players will just get pushed up instead of the pool falling, because we're seeing guys like, Dodgers, why am I,
Trinan? Kenny Jansen.
No, that's the thing.
Blake Trinan.
Blake Trinan's moving up, because Jansen isn't signed, and he's been rumored to Miami, and
Georgie's been moving him up.
Yes, because I talked to him definitely all the time, and he's definitely in on him now, because I think the writing's on the wall that he might actually be leaving, even though we all assumed he'd be going back. So, and for some reason I still mess up Trinan and Trevino. That's where I for some reason in my head I get that mix up going, but anyway, that's why I was like, what's his name? Like, I know it, but anyway, I digress. But so as we see players possibly gain more sure roles, we're seeing them move up in ADP, and it's getting to a point now where it's like, I tried something new this draft. I don't really like how it turned out. I took 2 early closers, actually. I took Presley and then Kimbrel, who isn't guaranteed a closing spot, actually. So, like, he's a closer in all, like, in everyone's mind, but realistically, I could have just burned a spot. But in theory, I took 2 early closers, and I realized I don't like that. But I had to try it to know that, because I've seen it. I've seen people do it, and I liked how their pitching staffs have worked out. But I don't like how mine did, because I feel like I'm missing that true SP3, and I feel like, or even SP2, because McClanahan is my SP2 in this league, and you can argue he should be a 3 because there is unknowns there, and there's I have Corbin Burnes as my ace, so there's some safety there, but then there goes all the other safety. I wanted Stroman the round he went, of course, Cubby Knowles took him, and that hurt me because I know you and I both love Stroman, and Stroman was supposed to be that like that innings eater, like that just plug and play, and I didn't get that. So this build has been a little more challenging, but ultimately I felt the need to try it because I'm seeing how relief pitchers are moving up the board, and I also wanted to put stress on others, like because there was teams with like no relief pitchers yet.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I'm because, on the clock.
Yeah, the draft is moving right along here in around like 31 or 32. But it's tough while you make your pick here. I've been like doing the NFBC 50s, the 12 teams. I've been kind of looking at getting closers early and everything. I think it's more important a 12 team for one and two. It's easier to kind of backfill your roster, where a 15, it's tricky. So it's like you either have to take it early, but you're skipping on some potential starting pieces that you need, because we're in round 31 right now, and it's barren. We're already, and we got 20 more rounds to go, so it's rough. But like what I did this time is I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna go crazy closers, but I got Edwin Diaz in the fourth, and I didn't get another potential closer till like way later, and I don't love it, but it allowed me to fill things elsewhere. It's that's the beauty of doing these early drafts. The one thing I'll say, we can go back to the DC format if we want, I think when we get more into the redraft mode, you won't see this as crazy. Like, you might see the Hendricks and the haters go early, but I don't think you're going to go see full craziness, because you can pick guys up in fab. That's why this DC method, it's like you have to get them because there is no fab. This is your team you're rolling with, and you have to pray you get saves.
Yes, and that's important to remember, because not everybody plays 15-team leagues. Not everybody plays draft and hold. That's just what we're playing. But the thing is these drafts are what a lot of us are playing early, and a lot of us in the industry are getting in on. So the industry as a whole kind of dictates ADP on every site. And you're going to see closers high on every site, even in 10-team, 12-team points, roto. Like, you're going to see that, and it's going to be skewed. You have to, and that always goes back to knowing your league, knowing your rules, knowing all that stuff, so that way you can adapt and let people take closers early, say in a points league if they're ranked high, and take advantage of like falling talent, stuff like that. You just got to know that. So hopefully that's what we're here to guide you with. But we are talking about what we are doing right now and seeing right now, because this is all the data we have. Just want to drive that home.
And there's been one OC drafted so far. There was five closers in the top 50 picks. I think there's like 10 in the top 100. So they went early. I have a hunch that'll change as we get closer to March. Like you said, more openings might look secure. There might be some more situations like that. Cause I agree. Giles / Streckenrider is an interesting one. There's a couple other little spots here and there. Like when we started drafting in FPAS, Mark Melancon was nothing. Now he's the closer in Arizona. So he moved up boards like crazy. Like, there's little things like that that are definitely going to take place as we keep running along here. Positional scarcity is one, I guess you could say. Relief pitchers could be a scarce position, all things considered. Everyone loves to talk third base, and we're going to get to a player later that you tweeted about. And I've actually almost finished an article kind of in my brain, right? Like my profiles are nothing like Curlin's. He's way deeper and more in depth than mine, but mine's just like my brain working through things. And his name is Josh Donaldson, but we'll talk about him later about why he's kind of underappreciated. But the third base position, like I say, it's very top heavy, but there is depth to it if you're willing to go through the murky waters, is the way I see it. So are you one that wants to get one early and not avoid or not deal with the murkiness? Or are you good just kind of waiting and rolling the dice on a Donaldson or an Eduardo Escobar or something like that?
I'd rather get them early. I've had two money drafts, the 150 DCs, and I got J-Ram. Luckily, he fell to fifth overall, because I was happy to take him there, no problem. Because I think I even heard you on the thing, it was last episode, mentioned that you've taken him first overall, and I see no problem with that. See, I do listen to your show. And I was like in heaven when he fell to fifth or fourth, whatever. I think it was fourth, maybe. And this last draft, I had the ninth pick. So was that like pick 20 on the way back or something like that? And Machado and Devers, I think we're both there. Devers got taken right ahead of me. I was like, I'm taking Machado, no hesitation, because I don't want to deal with the murkiness. Now, if I miss on those three, I don't go Riley and others. I kind of wait and sit back, and I'm willing to take a Chris Bryant. It's kind of, he's like the last of like that of that grouping of like I want as my starting third baseman personally. So it's like the top eight, top nine. I'm trying to get one of those for sure, especially in deeper leagues. Because if you something like in my first league, I actually got Chris Bryant as my outfielder because I already had J-Ram. So I made the pool even, and that's the thing. People are not just taking one, people are taking two of these guys.
They're hoarding.
So what it does is it causes greater scarcity. So yes, obviously there is something to be said about the depth of the position, because you can find gems if you believe in the bounce back of certain guys, like a Hayes or something. But in terms of just safe players, it's very minimal, and I'd rather avoid going fishing in the murky water. And like, you never know what you're gonna get. How many times have you seen something on YouTube? You go fishing in murky water, you pull up a bicycle frame. Like, you want that? You really want that? Is that really what you want to go fishing for? Yeah. You know,
especially a guy my size, we don't need a bicycle frame. It won't work out very well. But it's funny you mentioned that, because like, I have the draft board up, so I'm kind of scrolling around, and I usually try to get one of the top 8 or 9, like you're saying, or I try to get one of the top guys. I've got a lot of Devers shares already. Just saying, screw it, and I get stolen bases elsewhere type thing. But looking at the draft we did, and this is like, I'm not joking when I tweet out, like, this is a crazy draft. This is one of the sharpest rooms I've been in December. Like, these guys, like, literally this last round or 2 rounds ago, I was wanted an outfielder. You went Garrett Cooper, then Cubby went Ramirez, and then so I was stuck with David Peralta. I was like, the two guys I queued up, gone.
My pitching just got ripped to shreds too. Like, I had no pitching queue left.
It's happening like crazy in this league. But the third base thing, it's like, I like Ke'Bryan Hayes. I think there's something there for sure. I'm not looking to run after Ke'Bryan Hayes, but that's who I drafted in round 10, because the third base pool was shrinking dramatically. Like, I could have waited and got somebody else. I should have just taken my own advice and got Ryan McMahon, but I was just, I took Hayes, did that thing. Nice Ross Stripling pick. I had him queued up. Well done. but then I have like Hunter Dozier later, which I like, but is he that great? And then it's just, third base is not fun. It's a not fun position if you don't, that's the risk reward type thing, the murky waters we're talking about. So, one thing I mentioned on my last pod with Matt Goodwin is, you know, we all tweet out our picks. I told people, look at the picks they made and then look at the full board and see like how it kind of flowed. Cause like, you listen to us as analysts and we'll say, like, this is guys we like, this is who we want. And then people might go, why didn't you pick them? Well, you got to see, like you said, we talked about rankings earlier. You gotta be able to bob and weave with the situation and go from there. So I think there's a lot to learn by looking at the whole draft board, not just a set of picks.
This is a open discussion part of the pod, right?
Oh yeah, we're open. Like, we could do this the rest of the show if you want.
Well, you know, I'm all about it. Yeah. I could talk for 3 hours. Like, it's me talking, no problem. But you mentioned ranks, and we talked about it, and I had to almost, like, you didn't agree with me until I broke down where I was going with it. So I think it's a good conversation.
First off, that's the beauty of Twitter, is people don't listen to the full conversation. So continue.
Yes, because on Twitter, you read what I'm saying. You don't know the intent or the way. Maybe you know me now because you know me, but a lot of times you don't know the person's like intent behind what they're tweeting. And I said, essentially, ranks are growing increasingly like pointless to me. And I mean that in the sense that when I'm drafting, I don't look at ranks outside of closers, because, and I didn't realize that closers were like the only ranks I kind of follow, because everything else is all about building your team, right? So I'm not going to go out of my way. Like, if I have Wander ranked above Javi Baez, and that was an example I used, which I actually don't have it that way, which might be a hot take for some people, but regardless, I digress. If you have Wander ranked ahead of Javi, but you think Javi's in for more stolen bases, more home runs, but Wander's sitting there and you're like, well, he's ranked ahead of him, but I need this power speed combo more that offers a little more ceiling. Ranks will make you dictate, well, I'm going to take this guy because I rank him higher, when really you should be taking what fits your team build better. So my argument was, roster construction is king over ranks. And not that, and the reason why ranks are helpful for people like in the industry especially, is because it forces us to sit down and look at every player. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't realize Tyler Stevenson wasn't much of a power hitter until recently.
Yeah,
he just doesn't have the power metrics. He hits almost 50% ground balls, but the plate discipline's there. The good batting average will come because of it. I think he has a decent floor, but the ceiling might not be what I was hoping, because unless he learns to elevate the ball with consistency. But that's the thing. I just assumed, oh, it's the starting catcher for the Reds, great ballpark. He's just shooing for 20-plus home runs and probably .270 batting average. No, I think the batting average is there. I think 10 to 15 should be expected until he fixes his issues or his lack of elevation. And that's fine, but that's the thing. That's like one of those like preconceived notions that's where rankings come in handy, when you're breaking down players, learning what type of player they are so you can build the optimal roster. So that's why rankings have their uses, but I think they have more uses for us as analysts than they do for consumers. I think they're clickbaity and great for traffic or great for pod listens and all that. They really are. Rankings, disputes, and all that. But I don't think that they are as usable in draft as people tend to or have in the past put on them, is what I'm getting at.
No, I think it's a great point. That's why once we started talking about it, it made more sense to me. Is I love making rankings to figure out the pool, to get an idea of what's going on, to see where I'd like to go in a draft. Like, in a perfect world, yes, you like to go right down your rankings, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's another reason why I don't do overall rankings, because that gets people. I do my positional rankings to give me an idea, and it gives you like buckets, as like Vlad says, or there's tiers where it's, hey, as I'm drafting, this like third base is drying up. Like, I got tons of shortstops left. Let's dictate things, or if I need stolen bases, or this, like, there might be more validity in doing rankings based on statistical categories than positional categories. That could be something to potentially do, or make a list of statistical rankings, but color code them by position, so you can kind of see different things along those lines. Could be something. So on skplaybook.com, you'll see that next week. But
way to put the pressure on me. Now you know what. Now I have to do it, right? Like, you said it. Now, yeah,
no, nothing else to do. But that's where the point is pretty good. Is because at first I'm like, well, rankings they help because they get us like focused, but I agree where they don't need to be the end all be all. And that's why I said so many times, and I'll say it many more times, especially during the draft season, is the one thing I'd recommend to any player is make your own rankings. Cause then you're not subject to someone else's, this list you went and printed up. Like, if you want to use our list, like, awesome. They're here. Yeah. I give you a Google sheet every year. I do it every single year. You're welcome to use it, but you need to know how to navigate it. And by building them yourself will help you navigate it. And I think that's a big difference. Like Mike is saying there, to make things happen. The question I do have for you though, why do you feel closer rankings are still important?
Because that's the one position where roster construction doesn't matter.
But throughout a draft, doesn't your roster construction still matter when you're using closers?
Yes, but it's but if I want a closer in the fifth round, I look at my ranks and take the best available. I don't need to pick, well, Class A has more K's versus Iglesias. I'm just literally, I'm looking at a list. And this is, again, one of the few times where Dave brought this up in our thing, and I was like, you know what, Dave? I agree with you. Normally, I argue with Dave. I like to argue with Dave. It's fun. Dave McDonald, for those who might not know who's listening. Me and Dave go back and forth a lot. But in this situation, he was very correct. And I didn't really think, I never really thought about it. I just always had a rank of closers and kind of just picked my favorite. Now, I still do tier-based ranks, which is similar to buckets in a sense. But tier-based with closers is I have three guys in this spot that I value similarly. So maybe one draft I'll take him, one draft I'll take this guy, and so forth and so on. So that might change. Like, oh, well, you have Iglesias ranked third. Why'd you take Class A third this draft? Because I don't see too much of a difference, and I want to change. I don't want to be all in on a guy on every, because I drafted enough to want different players. And so that's where you'll see, like you mentioned, people will look at your board. Well, you're all in on this guy. You said you're all in, but you didn't draft him. Well, I have him on five of my six other drafts. Like that's why I don't have them here. So, but yes, closers, again, to circle back around, closers are the one position where you can just look at a list, and if you want a closer, you take the highest guy on your list.
Yeah. Okay. Agree. Totally agree on that one. So that makes a lot of sense. How are you attacking the early rounds in drafts? We talk about how deep the starting pitching pool appears to be. It's obviously a lot deeper in 12 teams, the NFBC 50s than the DC 150s. But are you going pitching early? Are you trying to get those big steel shortstop guys? Because, you know, I've talked to Fish and other guys, and it makes tons of sense once you start doing it. The top, like, four or five picks is the gravy land. Like, you can build a team you feel like you're ready to go to battle with. The back end gets a little different. So how are you going about it?
So far, I've tried two things I don't normally do. Like, the early closers threw off how I started this draft, because I actually started this draft pretty on brand. I like to get one starting pitcher in my first three picks. Very, very common strategy. I prefer a first round hitter, but this draft, Harper was taking one pick ahead of me, and I was kind of like, where I was like, and you took Tucker, so I was like, I don't want Trout there. No pitcher was taken off the board in the first eight picks. It was straight hitters, and I like Corbin Burns a lot. I was like, I gotta get myself a share. Let me go ace. I took my ace. Machado was my first hitter, and then who was my second pick? I think I took Trevor Story in the third. And at that point, I was like, I really like how this started. I always like that. That's how I usually start the first three rounds, a pitcher mixed into two hitters. So three. So in my first three picks, it's usually a base of two hitters and pitchers. And you mentioned speed and Machado. That's why I have Machado ranked second. I know ADP has Devers second. Machado, I see 10 plus bags from usually. So I think that gives him a little bit of an edge for me, because all things being equal, playing time, good teams, I don't see much of a difference personally. So I take Machado ahead of Devers, but that's just me. And then I got Story, so that gives me, again, the power-speed combo. And now I'm leaving my rounds with power, speed, and pitching, and that's why I like to have my – and then, obviously, early closer, I usually like to get one, but I'm seeing enough of who I like going around like 6, 7, 8. So I think my next draft, I'm going to try doing like 3 hitters, 2 starters, and then maybe a closer and kind of build from there. I am trying different things this year because I don't want to say what works and what doesn't work. I know for me, what doesn't work is this 2 closer situation, because when I took Kimbrel, I'm going to pull that up. Personally, I'm realizing, because when I took Kimbrel, where was that? Round 7. I passed on everybody. Round 7's early. Yeah. I passed on Chris Bryant, who I'd rather have had on offense. Varsho is my first catcher I would have liked to have. Let's see.
Answer me this real quick. Answer me this. Just thinking back, this is what's fun. That's why I say look at the whole draft board. So You took Kimbrel in round 7. Knowing that he's got closer ability, but he still has to be traded, of course. And there's everything points to him being traded, but it still has to happen one way or another.
Agree.
You took, and I don't mind the pick, but you took him before Jordan Romano, Mark Melanson, and Camilo Duvall. Those are 3 guys that are very popular in the closing landscape. Would you rather have any of those 3 looking back on it than Craig Kimbrel?
Well, see, I actually took Romano over Kimbrel the draft before, so this goes back to me having them ranked similarly diversifying. Yes, because it's Romano, I feel more secure in his role. Melanson, I do too, but I don't believe in. I like to draft skill set at catcher, at closer early. I think Kimbrel's skill set. So that's all that is. So I do keep Romano and Kimbrel ahead of those other names you mentioned. Yep. Duvall scares me, not because I don't think he can do it, but I almost think that, I mean, they still have Jake McGee. They still have other options there. And
I've said it on so many podcasts where people ask me as a dance guy, what do you think? And I said, it should be Duvall. It's like, he should get it, but McGee's there and it's Kepler. Gabe Kepler. I always screw up. But yes. Duvall, I think Duvall still gets like 70%. He should be more. But like you said, it's not as locked down as I think people are giving it credit for.
And my favorite closer number 2, which I'll say out loud, which again, I would have actually had in this draft 100% had I waited on closer, but Soto. I like getting Soto a lot. Gregory Soto, he's already been named the closer.
Yep.
And the team is continuing to try to build around, you know, their youth and their, you know, they got the young pitching coming up. They just got Baez. I expect them to go out and get other pieces. I like Soto a lot as my second relief pitcher. And usually he falls to like that 10th round range. And that would have allowed me to get, like, okay, if I wanted a pitcher, let's see, who's a pitcher? I could have gotten Bassett or Valdez, Framber Valdez, both of which were on my queue. I could have gotten, that's probably been one of those two. Those are usually the 2 guys, like, in that area I usually would have taken. But, yeah, so it kind of threw off my whole draft. Also, wait, did, what's his face go that before that? Stroman, no, Stroman wasn't gone. I would have, I take Stroman before ADP, but I probably would have taken Stroman because even if I didn't take a pitcher there, I would have taken a different hitter, which would have not made me feel
changed the need something to take. Later.
Yeah. It wouldn't have made me feel the need to take Haniger in the 9th. Yeah. And I would have taken Stroman knowing I needed SP because, again, McClanahan and Burns, although I love Burns, I like having a secure third piece there because McClanahan can bust. I mean, I think he's going to do great. Obviously, I took him in the 6th round comfortably. But I think the bust potential is there because there's a lack of track record and a whole bunch of stuff. Plus, it's the Rays. Who knows how they're going to treat him? But I don't feel safe with my pitching staff now because of this. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've been chasing pitching a lot of this draft. Like, I still like my pitching staff, but it's a lot of youth with question marks is the issue. And now I'm loading up on, like, older guys. Like, people will look at my draft board and go, these are guys you've hated forever. But in round 32, I just made a pick. I took Patrick Corbin. And that hurt so bad to take. But in my mind,
just to get innings.
He's innings. I literally, while you were talking, I was looking at his whole Fangraphs profile from the last couple of years and trying to figure it out. They had the high ERA and everything. The home run to fly ball ballooned last year. But the fly ball rates didn't change. He just gave up a boatload more barrels than he's ever given up. Like, his Sierra and his XFIPs both say that he should have been almost a full run below. I'm not the pitching guru. So many are. That's like the thing I'm trying to learn more than anything. But just looking at all the outlying stats, like the normal stuff, the ground balls, the fly balls, the hard hits, all this was normal. The barrels were higher. The home run to fly ball was higher. It's like if you just have like a minor tweak, he could at least be a serviceable arm. I don't think he's going to be a Cy Young arm, but it could be serviceable. He could be broken. I don't know. But it was like, do I take Corbin or do I take Dylan Bundy? Where am I living right now? This is the fun of being in these drafts right now.
And that's why these drafts are important, because I agree. I'm with you. My pitching analysis isn't where it needs to be drafting this early, to be honest. Like, this is my second draft. And I told myself after the first one, hey, pitching rankings, get your pitching analysis done. However, I haven't, and I keep falling back on, like, I'm looking at my first draft and pretty much falling back on the same picks in this draft. Like, I'm getting Ross Stripling again, Matt Manning again. Like, I'm taking a little bit of upside here because these are reserve picks, but guys I think that can stick to line. Now, I know Stripling is going to be a short leash because Nate Pearson and all that, but Pearson also pitched out of the bullpen last year. He's going to need to get stretched out. I think he starts off in the minors to get stretched out, and Stripling maybe by then keeps his spot, but it's a big if. Now, realistically, if Nate Pearson falls again, maybe I'll take him just to kind of like, okay, I'm securing that Jays fifth rotation spot type of thing. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, sure. That's if he falls. Now that I told you what I want to do and you pick before me again.
I promise I will not take him with my next pick. Now, if it's two picks from now, you might be in trouble. You've been warned. I'll be nice and not take him with my next pick.
Well, maybe falls. I mean, but realistically, but this draft, again, because of how I just, you learn a lot by drafting early. Sometimes it can be quote unquote burning money. I don't think I've done that. I think I'll be competitive, but I'm not overly confident because of my lack of prep for those late rounds compared to where I will be even in a month from now, like maybe a couple weeks from now even.
Well, that's why I got in with you because I knew you were burning money and I wasn't. So, like, I was already thinking, okay, now it's a 14-team league. So we got that going for us.
And then we have Cubby Knoll, who self-admittedly hasn't done any draft prep and just jumped in.
Yeah, but then we got some sharks in this deal. You obviously have Waxman, who's done 75,000 drafts already.
Waxman's trash.
You got Fish, who's Fish is an amazing.
Fish is trash.
Yeah. Like, I love Turnage, those guys. Yeah, Turnage. You got so many guys in here that are so good at this thing. And they're like silent assassins. They just kind of do, and then boom, boom. You're just like, good Lord.
I DM'd Turnage and yelled at him for constantly
taking your
picks. Sniping me. Yeah. He sniped me on Winker. He sniped me on Class A. It was bad. It was like two in four rounds. He took that like of players I was like targeting. And I'm like, okay, I've had enough of you. he took Josh Bell right before. I was actually good because I know you're a Cronenworth guy. I wasn't going to take Cronenworth. I wanted Josh Bell. He took Josh Bell one pick ahead of me. I was like, well, I guess I'll fall back. And I love Cronenworth too. And that multi-position eligibility is really nice. But
I'd rather have Bell too. So I'm with you.
Wasn't the plan. Yeah.
It's okay. I wanted Luis Urias before Cabrian Hayes, and that didn't happen. But yeah. You mentioned some of your, you know, learning, digging into pitching more. I saw you tweet about him. So I'm going to ask you, because you took him like three picks before Stripling. Why are you all in on Matt Manning?
I don't know. I didn't.
You said you have him in two of two drafts. So you're all in so far.
that was our DM group, man. That wasn't supposed to be public. No.
Yeah, I did. I didn't take a picture and post it like other people do.
I'm just taking a shot on what I think is a secure rotation spot on a team getting better. Yeah. I'm betting on the prospect pedigree here, and he's like my SP 8 or 9. So at this point, I need innings. I need a guy I think is going to grow. And it's more or less taking a chance on the prospect pedigree we saw him utilize and show it previously. So Matt Manning's a guy that I tend to fall back on very late in drafts and just hoping that he can be nearly the guy. Like, if he gives me a 4 ERA, pitches 150 innings, that's useful in this format. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. And I think that's a fair ask. I mean, we've seen him be better in the minors. It hasn't translated to the majors yet, but we're talking about a single stint. And the strikeouts, I don't understand where the strikeout dips so much from the minor league track record. Usually there is a dip, but not that much. I think a full offseason of up with the team and kind of can't even say a full offseason. We don't know what's going to happen. But assuming a full offseason, maybe he gets things together. I'm just taking a chance there, because if it's not him, it's like these are the names going around him for reference for people listening. So it's Matt Manning or Michael Wacha. I guess Wacha's maybe a safer in this spot.
Any innings are a massive question mark.
Zach Thompson, which I understand innings are there, but I don't think the ceiling, I think there's less of a ceiling. I know Zach Thompson was a darling of the Marlins for a few games last year, but realistically he was like a non-prospect. Mad Bum was probably a better pick. He went before Manning, but Mad Bum,
Mad Bum would fall. You want to talk about an innings eater late in a draft? That's beautiful.
That's really all he's giving you. But I think Manning, maybe if he doesn't give you the inning, like, that's why I'm saying 150. I'm trying to be, I think that's a fair ask. Yep. And a four, like a low 4 ERA feels also like a fair ask. So, but he's more of a two-start streamer or injury plug-in. But I mean, the guy right above him, I took just hoping for saves and Denelson Lamet, because Lamet, if he could be a closer, would be elite and would be a steal.
He would be. I'm with you there. It's fun because looking at some of these names, it just really opens things up to what could be. And like Mike said with the Manning pick and a lot of these picks, like I said with Corbin and stuff, innings are huge. And the beautiful thing about this format is you just need depth, because you're going to have injuries. You're going to have guys that you just have to fill in. And that's why you'll start seeing a bunch, like Garrett Crochet was just taken. He's an elite reliever. Might not get you a ton of saves. He'll get you wins, good ratios. You can plug him in from time to time. So you have an arm out there, essentially. And that's where this format is so much more different than your redraft. And obviously, when you're closer to the season, we'll focus more on your redraft stuff. But this is what we got right now. And that's why I go and take a guy like Patrick Corbin. We like Mad Bum. Are they elite? Are you going to play them in Coors Field? Heck no. But there's going to be matchups. There's going to be two-start weeks where you just want those innings to try to accumulate strikeouts, maybe sneak a win in there. If you go back and look at some of the guys that have posted it, I know Maddie Wood and some other guys have it. If you look at the numbers that helped win a draft champions, like a ERA and a WHIP compared to a redraft, they're way different because you are forced to use guys like Patrick Corbin, Madison Bumgarner, where in a redraft league, you might never even think about rostering them, or you'll cut them the second they're bad. Like there's ways you can navigate. So that's why this discussion is interesting. Is it, and what we're picking right now in our draft, the redraft's already done. So these guys are already going to be on the waiver wire. So they're not even an issue for you type situation. So that's what kind of, it makes it much more interesting at least.
And this is one of those things where you listen to this conversation. Again, if you listen, if you play in shallower formats or even 15 teamers, but with a, because I guess this would be beyond the reserve picks at this point too, right?
Round, yeah, it's like 30 rounds. Like this is
So it's just, we're in round 32 right now. So yes, like these would be fab pickups. These are guys that you think about at the end of your draft, or make sure you have them, just have them on your watch list. I mean, we've seen Stripling be great, and
especially in a fab league for like 3 weeks, he's been awesome. Then he just dropped him again. It's beautiful.
Yes, and that's why it's like I'm hoping to catch him on the right.
And I'm not making fun of you there. Like you giggled. I've drafted him in the NFBC 50s. Like I'm on the same wavelength you are with him.
It's just right now there's an opportunity there, and we've seen Nate Pearson. I think we all love the idea of Nate Pearson, but right now he's just an idea. So until we see the idea of Nate Pearson be a thing, Ross Stripling has that fifth starter spot, assuming they don't go out and sign somebody else. I mean, there's still that. Like that Stripling could get relegated to a bullpen role, which we've seen him flourish in. So maybe he's just a guy, a middle reliever I throw into my, like, healthy. I just want somebody who's going to be healthy, that because come the All-Star break, when half my team's on the IL, I need Ross Stripling just to be healthy. Be in the majors and be healthy.
I've told the story, like, on some shows with Toby. Last year in my NFBC 50s and whatnot, I had a couple leagues where I had no first basemen the last 3 weeks, and I drafted three or four. Like, injuries just go bananas. It's chaos. So it's big. Like it also makes you want to get multi-position guys a little more than you might focus on it in other leagues. Do you, like, that's where Cronenworth is really good in this format, because he's got so much eligibility, where in a redraft you might want that Hoskins or that Bell to play first base, where you don't think about playing Cronenworth at first base, but like in week 20 of the season he might be playing first base for you.
Yeah, and that's why Cronenworth was an easy choice there when Bell was taken, because I wasn't necessarily avoiding Cronenworth. I just wanted Bell more because I wanted a first baseman. But I found myself at now 2-for-2 with Anthony Descafani and Trey Mancini. He keeps falling. And if you look at what happened, he had a great first half. And I think just the All-Star break slash, you know, fatigue kicked in, and then the home run derby, maybe that curse. He still hit, like, everything was the same except for he hit a lot less home runs in the second half. So I think Mancini can get back to being a 30 home run bat. But honestly, I'm banking on 250 and 25 out of him. And he's going to be hitting in the middle of the order, possibly traded to a contender midseason. I like him a lot. I keep getting that skill set has value in these formats, and you know he's going to play every day, likely DH. I keep falling back on Mancini at first base, I've noticed, but Cronenworth, going back to the multi-position eligibility, allows me to plug and play, because I have Mancini, I can put first base now, move Cronenworth around to corner infield, middle infield, second base. He's been a nice luxury, because later in the draft, when I was eyeing Wilmer Flores, I decided I didn't have to take him, because as long as Cronenworth can stay healthy. I know I put all my eggs in one basket here. I still have obviously picks to make that will help. I've gone really deep at outfield stuff, but Cronenworth allows that. And I think if you can get two of those guys, it's even better, because now Cronenworth, I can move him around. And if I had one more, I can plug that person into this position, and Cronenworth kind of becomes a util for the team too, while not crushing you anywhere.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. Like, I just keep staring at this draft board, seeing guys I had targeted that these guys are taking.
You stole Colton Wong the round I was going to take him. I took Mancini because you took Colton Wong, by the way.
That's the thing, is, and that goes back to what we're saying about the rankings in general. You have to be able to adapt. Like, I have so many guys in my queue. It's just, and it's silly. Some are just silly names, but like it helps my team build out. And then that guy's gone, and then that guy's gone. It's like, you guys got to be kidding me right now with what you're doing here. One thing I will mention, and I haven't seen it in obviously I like 12 team leagues. I talked about it with the guilds a couple weeks ago. I'll be playing in some OCs this year for the first time because I like the ability to be able to navigate a waiver wire where you're not like forced to take garbage just to fill a roster. Where a 15 team, there's weeks where you're just like, oh, okay, well, he's gonna hit, but is it worth it type thing? But you just need the at bats. Where a 12 team, it's fun. So the NFBC 50s, I love. They're a cheaper platform for people that to get their feet wet in the system, the whole deal. The catcher pool there, obviously, in 12 team compared to 15, is you can get three or four guys pretty easily. You can wait and get two late type deal. They flew in this draft. Have you noticed that as in your other 15s? Like, this is, I guess I have two, but I usually have three or so by now, and I just don't want to force my hand anymore because it's ugly.
I mean, I don't know if you've looked at my catcher too. I just took him, and that shows you how bad it was. I kept procrastinating. Yeah. Jonah Heim is my catcher number two, which is terrible. He should never be someone's number two catcher.
No,
and here I am. Yeah. That's the problem. That's what happens when you wait on catcher. Like, I'm probably higher on Travis d'Arnaud than a lot after looking into him. I think he's gonna be more, especially if I'm banking on the DH in the NL. So with him, that's probably why I'm a little higher, because I saw how heavily he was utilized. Now, I know they have Marcell Ozuna over there in Atlanta and other options for the DH, which they utilized Marcell Ozuna in the DH in 2020. That team is very similar from 2020 to 2022, by the way. With or without Freeman, you can plug and play whoever's going to be there. But they utilized Ozuna heavily, but when they weren't utilizing Ozuna, it was almost always d'Arnaud. And d'Arnaud had like 8 starts as a DH, which kept him healthy all through 2020, which isn't a big sample size, but big enough. But it showed that they were able to keep him on his feet, which is more than what can be said pretty much every other year. So there is question marks there. But if the DH comes to the NL, I think it benefits not only Ozuna because he's going to likely be the DH most of the time, but I think d'Arnaud picks up his days off as the DH so they can keep his bat in the lineup. So d'Arnaud's a guy I've become higher on because of this theory of mine, because they've shown this willing to do so. Even in interleague play, when he was healthy, he actually was utilized as a DH in one of those games last year in 2021. So again, they're showing their willingness to give him those DH at-bats, which is big for d'Arnaud because that bat can be difference-making at the catcher position.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And then that leads me to one of my last topics in our little open discussion here is the NL is going to get a DH. I think that's just a given. If it doesn't, this is the worst collective bargaining agreement I've ever seen. Like, this should happen for sure. You wrote a column on skplaybook.com about what you think the effect would be with the NL DH, at least on catchers, because I agree where it will help some, but it's not going to help as many as I think people think type situation.
That was my whole thing.
Yeah, they think it's a given. So where do you think it lands to help out? Because some teams are just going to use it as a day off for so many guys. They don't have a guaranteed DH.
So I think it's just going to be team specific. But, I mean, I didn't look at the AL. I just didn't, because we know almost just by watching baseball, it's rare you see a catcher DH. And if it is, it's Gary Sanchez, right? Like a big bat. At least it was Gary Sanchez before Stanton was pretty much a full-time DH. But it's very, very few. And that's going to hold true to the NL. I think people, for some reason, and I think, I don't know why, maybe it's just I think I'm seeing it more than I am, but I feel like people overestimate the effect of the DH for the catcher as a whole. And that's what led me down this analysis, just because all we have for NL, like any type of data point, was 2020, and then obviously interleague play in 2021. And the only teams like the Cubs, but they have Contreras, a good hitter who's a catcher is who's going to benefit. Realmuto, Contreras, and that's why d'Arnaud was the big surprise, because d'Arnaud, I mean, I knew he was a decent hitter, but I didn't realize how much the Braves were willing to utilize him as a DH. Now, all this can change based on who teams sign. If Nelson Cruz goes to the Braves or Soler goes back to the Braves and they have Soler and Ozuna, bye-bye those extra bats for d'Arnaud, most likely, because there's no way they want to put both of those guys in the field. Although I am wondering with Soler, and I swear I've heard this before with him, playing the field seems to make him better, because look what happened when we went to the NL and played the field. And I think he's one of those guys. I feel like I've heard that before with him. I'd have to go find the article.
I can go check into it a little later as well, because another thing on the Josh Donaldson front, I'm terrified if he becomes a full-time DH, because if you look at his splits, at least just last year alone, he was horrible as a designated hitter.
That's an interesting split. I wonder how he is at for his career. Have you looked at the career?
I did not see the career. I just looked at 2021 splits last when I was doing my article, and it just goes to show you, because there's some players that have talked about it, that it was always impressive for like Ortiz and Frank Thomas because they could find a way to get in a rhythm. But you hear other players, they get the random day at a DH. They just kind of sit there on the bench like, oh, crap, I got a hit. Like where these other guys are in the tunnel, like hitting off a tee to stay loose and everything. It's a different mindset to be in the game that not all these guys have just yet. So it's a different animal for sure.
Let's take a quick break from tonight's episode of Bench with Bubba. Let me talk to you about Fantrax.com. And just 2022 are about a week away, give or take. It's fantasy baseball season. That's the bottom line, folks. You're listening to the podcast. You want to play some fantasy baseball. We're doing a third base review, the most boring position. Well, catcher's most boring, but pretty darn close. But you know what isn't boring? Like I said, Fantrax.com, the most customizable site for fantasy baseball you can find on the market, especially if you're in the dynasty leagues, the deepest player pools you can find on the market. It's absolutely amazing. I've been playing at Fantrax for a few years now. I love it. Anything you want to do, any type of format, it's great. If you've never played on Fantrax, bring your league over. They'll take care of it. You'll be upgraded. Great stuff over there. Get to try all the tools Fantrax has to offer. It is absolutely amazing. If you're new to Fantrax, use Fantrax.com/Bubba. to sign up over there, get your account, get going, try some best balls, try some drafting holes, get in there. There's public leagues, there's private leagues, all kinds of stuff at Fantrax.com. It is an absolute blast. Right now I'm running my Beat Bubba best ball leagues, drafting hole leagues. We're going to do many of these throughout the next month or so. So if you're interested, fill out the forms I tweet out. Come join us if you're new. Fantrax.com/Bubba. All kinds of great stuff there, but it gets better. It gets better. He's not a third baseman. He's a shortstop. But if you are new and you use Fantrax.com/Bubba, use promo code Tatis, T-A-T-I-S. You know why? You'll be entered to win a free autographed Fernando Tatis Jr. baseball. So check out Fantrax.com/Bubba to get your teams going for the 2022 fantasy baseball season. But for now, back to Benched with Bubba.
And it's weird because, again, that's never looked at. Although maybe Donaldson, I feel like Donaldson's the type of guy because you've seen him. He seems pretty smart with baseball. You've seen him on MLB Network and all that. I think he could adapt given the opportunity to say, hey, by the way, we're going to DH you 3 times a week. Maybe he'll find a routine.
Yeah.
But he's one of the few guys I think would adapt. But yes, that's an interesting stat about him as a DH, though. I didn't look at that one.
So, yeah, no, and I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to count that as a reason not to draft him, but it's just one of those things where it goes to the conversation of who benefits from the DH and might not be what you think. It adds another hitter to a lineup, which is always great, but it makes things interesting in those regards as well. So something to think about.
Yeah.
Let's do some player discussions real quick and we'll have some fun with this. 'Cause I know these will turn into whole other discussions as well. I'm going to say our boy, because I'm with you, because I have Frank Schwindel in so many leagues right now, so many leagues. You wrote him up. I picked him up on the Fab a lot last year. He was huge for the finish of my season. This boy can hit. Finally got his first opportunity last season with the Cubs once the A's traded him. And I'm a believer in what we're seeing. What do you got on Frankie Schwindel on your article about him?
So I went in. I go in with an open mind. I really do. I let the stats kind of speak to me. And I was kind of surprised at what they had projected for him, given they only have like Steamer only hasn't projected for like 130 games and give him like 25 home runs over 130 games. I'm like, I see more of a 25 home run guy in general with a ceiling of possibly 30 because the hit tool is legit, but he has what scares me about Schwindel is that willingness to chase he actually makes a ton of contact. So it's great. He has a good hit tool. He makes a ton of contact, but if he's willing to chase, I think it was 38% of the time it was his O swing, which is your, swing outside the zone for those who might not know. And if you make as much contact as he does, that's going to lead to a lot of soft contact. And we actually saw that. We saw that his hard hit rate was like league average. His, average velocity on his fly balls and line drives was actually below average, I believe, or close to average. So the power didn't make sense to me, the power surge. And then I don't look at expected stats much, but I do like to look at them in terms of, okay, well, he did well in this little stint. He put up 30 home runs in like 118 games between the two levels last year. So I look at his X stats, and Schwindel's X stats compared to his production were like way off too. Like he way overperformed, which again, my initial dive into a player like him showed that he overperformed. And then that just kind of was like, okay, that shows it too. So I wasn't crazy for seeing that. So I think ultimately he's a bat. I mean, realistically, the hit tool can lend itself to a good average. The power, there's enough power there to get 25 home runs in a full season. Playing time is the only question. Does he get traded off midseason to a contender as a bench bat? That's why, like you said, our boy, I'm like, I'm not quite sold on him because that's why I keep falling back on Mancini, because I think Mancini, and then I take Jesus Aguilar. kind of like, and I think Schmidl's sandwiched between them and most people in ranks and in ADP. I find both of those guys safer in playing time. I find those guys to have a track record of production and a very similar idea and skill set as for Schwindel, but with that track record. So it's like, I tend to not get him because 29-year-old breakouts aren't my thing and the skill set isn't flashy. And what if pitchers realize he's willing to chase and start throwing him out of the zone more, causing increased soft contact? And now you're looking at a guy who the hit tool isn't going to carry as well when you're willing to chase and hit the ball out of the zone and create soft contact, because now you're going to be grounding out a lot or flares or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing with him. I'm with you. I believe the batting average is legit. Like, he can definitely do that. Yeah, power can come and go, especially with the guys that haven't proven it, and that's always the tough part. It's like, do you buy into it? I think he does have regular playing time until he obviously could get traded because the Cubs are doing Cubs things, and he's older. That's the one thing people, I don't know if they pay that close attention. He's a young prospect. He's been around the game for a while, so he's definitely a piece that can get dished out somewhere to needs NFC place type scenario. So that's an option as well. The question I have for you is, we can play, you mentioned you take Jesus Aguilar. I get it. He gets underappreciated a ton too. Would you rather take Frank Schwindel or Nathaniel Lowe?
Oh, I might go Lowe because of, I think they're both going to hit close to the middle of the order. I think Lowe now comes more interesting because I think RBI opportunity just got bumped up for him way more than we're going to see with the Cubs. And I think we can see, I mean, Lowe can literally luck himself into 100 RBIs, assuming that, that's a big assumption, assuming health for Seager. But if Seager and Semien are healthy, those guys, I think the power gets hampered a little bit by Texas. So they're on base. I think the extra base hits get up more. And then you have Nathaniel Lowe there to hit them in. And I think the RBI opportunities there are going to be great. And I'm leaning Lowe because I also trust the playing time more, because Texas doesn't have they look like they're going to go for it. If Lowe is performing, they're not going to trade him. Schwindel, the Cubs, I don't know what to think. They get Showman, they're rumored to get Correa, so maybe they will make a push and keep Schwindel there for the whole year. But I'm more likely to think that the Cubs trade Schwindel, again, to become more of a platoon/bench bat for a contending team. So that those, like, again, those are tie-breaking factors for me.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like I'm kind of low. Like, I hate that. I'm kind of low on Schwindel because of, like, these weird things I have conjured up in my head about him.
Well, and I agree with Nathaniel Lowe that I think it's not talked about enough. He's a huge benefactor of those two signings, maybe more so than those two signings are. So that's interesting as well. What about Frank Schwindel or Brandon Belt?
This is where I take Schwindel, because Belt I like Belt full-time playing somewhere else. I just don't think, A, he's going to play full-time here if he struggles at all against lefties. B, the health at this point, I think you got to question it. I do like Belts. I think Belts the better player. I just think Schwindel will remain on the field more, and the best ability is availability, right?
Yeah, no, it totally is, and that's been my biggest thing, because I love Brandon Belt. I even wrote about it in my first base primer. It's like, the dude is awesome. As much as I'm glad he came back to the Giants, I was hoping he'd go to, like, Yankee Stadium or something and just go let people see him hit 35 to 40 home runs, because he is that good. But you nailed it. It's the availability thing. And that's why I'm getting a lot of flack for my discussion. Well, that's the guy we'll talk about later. I'll talk about him now. Luke Voit. I tweeted it out, and, like, I get the fact, people. I'm not clueless to the fact that he's the 29th first baseman off the board around pick 280. I get that. That is a crazy price tag for Luke Voit. That makes a lot of sense to me. He's going after Frank Schwindel, by the way. But the thing I wanted to point out is, everyone's talking at-bats. We need at-bats. We need all these at-bats, Mike. It's the only way to go. Well, outside of playing 56 games in a 60-game season, he's played 68 or fewer games in four of his five Major League Baseball seasons. Like, I don't know about you, but that doesn't bode well. Like, his most at-bats was last year at 241. We hit 11 home runs, hit 239. And he basically was a backup to Anthony Rizzo by the time it was all said and done. So I understand, you know, if he plays a full healthy season, he could hit 35, 40 home runs. Are you willing to take that chance even at pick 280? I get there's value to be had there, but like, looking at our draft board at pick 280, so let's 150, we'll go 180. Let's just say round 24 even. Well, let's have fun with it. Round 24. You got still usable pieces and starting pitching that you might need. You got catchers that are potentially there. The round before that, a ton of outfielders. You can take a chance on like Jaron Duran and company. Are you willing to take a chance on Luke Voit?
No. No, I'm just out. And you kind of hit the nail on the head as to why. With Luke Voit, it's all about the health or lack thereof. And the Yankees have been rumored to Freeman and Olsen at this point. Yep. So maybe Voit gets interesting and a little more valuable to me if traded. Because I think right now, the reason why his price is low is not only because of the health issues and the lack of health as a whole, but Voit is assumed to be the backup, right? As, given how Yankees have been
used him last year. That's how I see it. People are telling, I'm telling you, Reddit is a fun place. You know this very well.
I refuse to believe that Reddit's not fun.
So many people saying, how could you not have Luke Voit? Blah, blah, blah. Well, I ranked 30 guys. He's 29th off the board. What if I had him at 32? Like, give me a freaking break. And yes. Secondly, I explained this. Like, well, if you said so-and-so, I'm like, so-and-so has a freaking job. Like, they said, you have Rowdy Tellez. Rowdy Tellez is the starting first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers, barring something crazy, where Luke Voit, A, doesn't play more than a third of the baseball season. And two, like you said, I agree. I don't think he's the everyday guy for them. They proved that last year. So I think the Yankees realize how injury prone he is.
I think he can be the everyday guy for somebody. I just don't think the Yankees are going to do it. I think the Yankees want, one, a left-handed bat in that lineup besides 100%. Joey Gallo, which I mean, he needs, I don't know, man. Gallo upsets me every year, but I'm just looking at the roster resource page now. They have Hicks, which can they really bank on Hicks to stay in the lineup? No. So that's not only is there injury prone issues up and down the lineup, but then they lack left-handed bats. And if they get a Gallo, if they get a Olsen or a Freeman, it fits their first base need, gives them a lefty bat in the middle of the order. It's a win-win for them. I mean, I feel like that's the way they want to go if they can. And that leaves Luke Voit on the outside looking in. And that's assuming, I mean, Luke Voit probably will get moved in a deal like that, I would think.
Maybe they trade him to Oakland for Matt Olson, but does that even do it for you in Oakland?
That makes him more appealing because at least there playing time. Yeah. I trust him to play until he's off the field with an injury. But at that point, then the price makes more sense. But I probably won't end up with him because I just end up with other players ahead of him, but I will be more confident in the playing time, which will make the price at least far more appealing, in my opinion.
Yeah, because like in our draft one right now, our buddy Fish took him at pick 161, and his average ADP is 280.
Fish
jumped him 120 picks.
What are you doing, Fish? Why do you? You know what? Thanks for the donation, buddy.
Well, because look at this. Let me find Voit again. Before that pick, because our ADPs aren't in here yet, his high was 240. Fish just set the high by 80 picks.
I think I'd rather take Max Muncy, and I don't even think Max Muncy is going to play this year.
Yeah, I don't think Max Muncy is going to play, but somebody did two picks earlier.
That's why I said Max Muncy.
Yeah. So, and I love Fish. He's a sharp dude. I do. So,
but he also jumped Lane Thomas, didn't he?
I'm going to have to ask him what his viewpoint is there on Luke Voit. But you mentioned Lane Thomas. You just wrote up Lane Thomas. So what you got on Lane Thomas?
So Lane Thomas is a guy that I'm a little bullish on, but the price is coming. Like, it was like, oh, he's going outside the top 300. I like this. And then I got beat to him in our draft in Arizona. So I was like, and of course it was by Toby, who's as sharp as anybody in that room. We're all laughing. I mean, that time for a little story was what he was like the only person there that had like, oh, he's like, my system isn't fully ready. But we're like, wait, your system is still up and running though? Like, you have a system in place? Meanwhile, like we all, like you said, we were running for just a list of players. And I think Mason had his ranks somewhat done or mostly done then. Spore had some done. And then Toby had a freaking system partially done. And his system spit out players for him as it was. So that's why it's funny. But anyway, I digress. I found that very comical. I love Toby, man. He's so awesome for that reason. Like, it made us all laugh. And he felt like insecure with his readiness. And we're over here like, dude, at least you have a part of a system. And we're over here like, dude, I think I'm going to take this guy. And I'm over here asking every time, is my guy available? Is this guy available? Like, I keep asking.
Toby's funny because he's got that system even when we do our review pods right now. And he's like, I haven't looked at this in a while. I need to see where he sets up in my deal. And I'm like, you're still going to beat everybody this year, aren't you? You're just going to be like, you're just like, doo, 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 doo. And he just does it because he's so smart like that.
Dude, it's awesome. He's just so awesome. I don't know. It's part of his personality I've come to know, and it's even better. Like, the fact that it's like just part of him. Like, you expect this, you know. But anyway, I digress. What was the question? Oh, back to Lane Thomas.
Lane Thomas.
Well, he took him from me, and that's why I remembered. But Lane Thomas crushed lefties last year and has crushed lefties all around so far. And again, very small sample with Thomas. He hasn't had much of an opportunity to play and play full time at that. But the reason why I have some optimism towards Thomas playing more so versus righties and keeping that leadoff spot is not only did he perform while obviously hitting leadoff for the Nationals, but they don't really have much of a reason not to give him an opportunity to run with it to start. And he has really good plate discipline against right-handed pitching, actually. Like, he actually, I think it was his first career. I'm looking at right now. Sorry. MLB level. The splits. Yeah, so he even though he struggled against righties, he's had bad BABIP luck hitting a whopping 208, or the BABIP was a whopping 208 against righties in his career so far. And he's still striking out just 25.9% of the time while walking at a double-digit clip of 12%. So if Thomas can take this good plate discipline against righties, so at least when he's struggling against them, it's not from a lack of seeing the ball well or a lack of plate discipline. You know, he's not striking out like Austin Meadows does against lefties, like a 30% plus clip. So I like seeing that there's a decent base of plate discipline there against righties. So I think that's a reason to be optimistic that we can see better performance against right-handed pitching. Plus, down the stretch, it wasn't sexy, but I know he hit like 225 against righties with even better plate discipline, again, during that small sample with the Nationals. And he is only, like, I think, 26 years old. So there is a chance, again, growth is still there. It's kind of like you're not used to seeing this mid-20s-year-old breakout, you know, type of thing. But I think the power and speed skill set is there. We've seen it in we've seen the track record of that in the minors for Lane Thomas. And you pair that with what I see as a potential for growth against righties and playing time that should be abundant, especially if there's a DH. I'm pegging him to be the leadoff guy as of right now because he showed such success in said role last year. I think they're going to give him a chance to run with it. And that makes me very intrigued with them because now you have power, speed, and opportunity. And those are the big three when you look for guys going later in drafts that you want to target to be able to fill in your rosters or be a bench spot. And Lane Thomas in shallower leagues won't be a starter for most people. He's going to be a bench bat, which is a good one because he'll be a fifth outfielder for shallower leagues. So I'm falling more and more in love with him, but I am apprehensive because of the struggles against righties. However, right now the price is getting kind of iffy for me. I like them he was going around pick 300. Now he's jumped up to about 250 since December started. So Thomas is kind of getting to that point where it's like, do I really like, it's becoming like I usually address speed by then too. So it's been like, I haven't had to force Lane Thomas as much as I do like him. I haven't had to force putting him on my team because I've addressed speed otherwise, but I mean, or you have fish. Oh, my dog's barking. Someone came in. Or you have fish jumping him. But let me get him. Let me let him out. I'll let you.
No problem. No problem. I'm interested in Lane Thomas. Like, he's very, very intriguing to me because of the leadoff factor. I think he will play every day. And we've talked about it time and time again on so many shows that obviously spot in the order will help tremendously when you're trying to accumulate stats. And that's what Lane Thomas can do. He can get on base with the occasional home run, of course, but he can get on base, steal some bags. You still got Juan Soto back there. You got Josh Bell. You got some competent bats behind him that can drive in some runs. So I'm a fan of what Lane Thomas can bring to a team. I'm with you there. It does stink he's going up, and I could see it keep climbing as we start seeing the stolen base trend continue to flow, and it becomes much more intriguing through the draft season. But, you know, looking at the ADP, I just have December's DC ADP up, and you mentioned Lane Thomas, 252. He's going right before guys like Mark Canha. Would you rather have Mark Canha or Lane Thomas?
After hearing all the trends about Showalter not running much, yeah. I don't know if Kana's speed is going to be difference-making enough for him to be running as much. So I think I'm going to start preferring, although it was Canha and Canha by a large margin, like prior to this Buck Showalter deal. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's a conversation to have, and I will give Lane Thomas the edge because I do believe, again, at that point you're targeting Canha, you're targeting him for speed. You're not targeting him for the power-speed combo. I think Thomas is more of a sure thing is all.
Lane Thomas at 252 or Tommy Pham at 274?
Give me Lane Thomas. I just don't trust Pham to stay healthy. How much is he going to run this year?
Lane Thomas at 252 or Harrison Bader at 227?
That one is intriguing. I'm going to go, and I had this in my head. It's like I sit there and think hard on this one, actually. I have. I'm going to say Bader, and what sucks about that is Bader isn't – he's going to hit the bottom of the order. So that's why I'm torn. But the glove is so good and elite that it's going to keep him in the field no matter what.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. The thing that with Bader that kills me every time, and it's maybe it's something I shouldn't care about, but again, I just said it with Lane Thomas, the batting order is so clutch. Bader just doesn't hit at the top. It's just it's so tilting. He's always at the bottom, a matter, because I guess it's a benefit to what the Cardinals have built there, but there's nowhere for Bader up top because they're not going to put him in the middle. So he's either top or bottom, and right now he's the bottom. So it makes it pretty tricky there with Harrison Bader, and that's, I guess, what turns me off on drafting him, but could be a something that bites me because all it takes is like one injury and he could probably slide up the leadoff and do the whole thing. So it's an interesting option for sure. Dalton Varsho, wanted to talk about him real quick. I know it's a fun conversation piece out there. I just wrote my little thoughts on him as if to Varsho or not to Varsho, because people still to this day have trouble understanding why taking a catcher early is important. If it's not mandatory, it's not a must, but there's a lot of ways to do it, and it makes sense. Like the Real Muchos of the world, you know, you get the 20 to 25 homers, the 10 to 15 steals. That's huge at the catcher's position. You just have to know how the risk reward of where you're picking guys. And that's why I wrote the Varsho piece, because there's a lot of risk rewards. We know Real Muto is going to play. Varsho showed us last year what he can be. And what it is the backup catcher to Kelly. So he keeps his catcher eligibility and an outfielder. And playing in the outfield is huge because it rests those knees and allows him to keep stealing bases. We've seen him in the minors. I did his like minor league seasons combined and like a 162 pace. It was ridiculous. It was like 30-ish homers, 20-ish stolen bases. So not probably sustainable, but give me close to Real Muto. Take a little step back. We're getting closer to the Real Muto world. It always relies on playing every day, but he's a legit speed guy. He's just behind Real Muto in catcher's sprint speed. He's way above the league average in the sprint speed. I like what I'm seeing with Varsho. He's like the fourth, fifth catcher off the board after your Real Mutos, your Perez's, your Will Smith's. It's just, and he's around pick 100 compared to around pick like 40 where you're going. So it's like a 60 pick different. But if you say you want him, I have to jump him because he's going to move up. I know you're interested in a guy like Varsho. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I took him fourth as a fourth catcher in the DC in Arizona, and I would still take him as the fourth. You can argue the third. I just have a hard time taking over Will Smith because of the track record for Will Smith, but the skill set for Varsho is more intriguing. It's almost like I actually tweeted it out this morning right before we started. Was Real Muto, why is Real Muto being looked at as the number two catcher when speed is such a sought-after category? All things being equal, are we really expecting 48 home runs again for Sal? Both hit close to two. Like if you get 260, 20 to 25 home runs and 10 plus stolen bases from Real Muto, why is that less valuable than getting close to 40 home runs and 270 batting average from the catcher? I can deal with that difference in batting average. And on top of that, I'm surprised his batting average is so high given how free swinging Salvi is. It's a whole other discussion though, because he doesn't have the same speed and all that, you know, Baez and other players with a similar profile have. I digress. However, it's kind of the same conversation. Now you have this guy who's rock solid in terms of power and probably batting average for the most part. And now you're taking a guy who's like a poor man's Real Muto, and they're going back to back as well, at least in my ranks. So it's all about what you need, and speed is what we need. And we saw Varsho in the second half last year. Like he kind of was like a bust for the first half. Obviously didn't play much. Came up and hit 290 in the second half with 10 home runs and 5 stolen bases. So I think 2010 is a fair estimate. And you mentioned playing time with Varsho. And again, going back to that whole catcher thing, Varsho is who stood out for the Diamondbacks in terms of the DH, because when they had the DH, they DH'd Varsho plenty, along with playing him in outfield and as a catcher. Same thing with in 2021, they were willing to like bounce him around back and forth. So I think the DH could benefit his at bats, but I think he's gonna play more than your average catcher. So playing time is huge for him. Yep. Varsho being the fourth catcher off the board, I think should be commonplace, and you can argue higher.
And he's another reason why people, when they just look at like projections, need to really. I talked about it with Matt last episode because he did some articles on it. Varsho Steamer only has him for like 93 games. Let's be realistic here. Barring something silly, he's playing probably 140.
Yeah, I don't understand why. Where's that coming from? That seems off.
That's why it's like Steamer projections are great. They're fun. It's what we have right now. Obviously, things can get tweaked, but you have to like go into this with like a logical situation and go, okay, if they have him for 93, but you want 140. Now what do we got? Like, so go use the Steamer 600, which has him around 140 games, and maybe he's closer to that than you're thinking. And when you use the Steamer 600 projections, I have the numbers right here on my – I always write down notes before I write an article. So I have where did my – there it is. So on Steamer 600, using 142 games, 253 average, 23 homers, 77 RBIs, 11 steals. I think steals are low, to be honest. But he'd have the 10th best average at catcher, the 5th best home runs, 2nd best runs, 2nd best RBI, 2nd best stolen bases. And I think that's a realistic thing. And as you mentioned with the DH, I think it'll help Kelly DH more to save him because his bat was very, he was hitting cleanup for the D-backs. Like he, especially against lefties, he was crushing them. So I think they could put him at DH, which again puts Varsho at catcher, which is most important because the biggest question mark with Varsho is would he keep eligibility? And because a lot of the questions I get with Varsho when I wrote my article was for Dynasty, would you keep him? I said, I get it. It's tricky because if he loses catcher eligibility, now he's just he's another guy. He's just another guy. But as that catcher, it's tremendous. So I took him in my last NFBC 50 as a catcher. I think it's very intriguing. So I'm with you. But you said you take him over Grandal. Is it strictly because of the stolen bases? You're muted on me.
I muted because my kids and they were yelling at the dog in the background. I apologize. I think I'm glad you pointed that out though, because I just kept talking. It'd been funny. Grandal, the reason why I have him ahead of him is two things. I think Grandal is kind of a one-trick pony. I mean, I know we saw that hot run at the end of the year where he hit like over 300 and all the home runs and all that. But I think realistically, outside of on-base percentage leagues, he's like a 230 to 240 hitter. Mm-hmm. So I think the batting average floors for both of them are very similar. Like I can see Varsho hitting 240, but I think it's gonna be better than that. But I think I don't like power over anybody who gives me 10 plus steal potential at the catcher position. It's just hard for me to take power when I usually address power. Otherwise, I'm big on Schwarber. I'm big on I'll take Haniger happily, like in these mid rounds to make up for the power. And that's the same type of skill set you're getting from the catcher spot. So if I can get steals from catcher, I think that's a big advantage. So that's why I have Varsho fourth. And I'm honestly like toying with the idea of third. I don't know, but the thing is I don't have to rank them third to get them third. I can let everyone else take Will Smith and I'll just fall back on Varsho every time. I get to freaking get him in a draft though, but I do like outside of FPAS, but I really do like him and I have zero qualms with anybody who ranks him even higher. I think wasn't it who was it that had him first by projections to start?
I honestly don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, damn it, it's gonna bother me because it's a huge name. It's I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now. It's
not Phil Dussault.
No. He I don't think Phil tells anybody anything.
No, really. He doesn't. He will not. Is it
smart? Look, it worked out for him. Why would he? Right.
Exactly. I'm with you.
It's a million. But I can't think of it. It's going to drive me nuts. It is a huge industry name too, and that's why it's driving me nuts.
Well, while you think about that, let's talk about your next guy because you tweeted about him yesterday or the day before. So I just want to get your thoughts on Austin Riley, where you're talking about, you know, if he does this, if he does that, sure, but I'm kind of going to pass on him and go get someone else. So what is it about Austin Riley that's not doing it for you, or is it strictly that he's the fifth third baseman at pick 58 right now?
Price. Yeah. Just price. I don't think he's the 300 hitter he was last year. I think last year could have very well been the career year, which is crazy to say about like a 23 or 24 year old guy. But we saw that with Harper, and this isn't a direct comp to Harper. We saw Harper peak, hit a valley, and then peak again last year. Now it's possible Riley has another big year like this, obviously, but I just don't think it's very commonplace even for a young guy to have this peak season and to keep repeating when he did essentially overperform most like in, for lack of a better term, in terms of like, again, the batting average and stuff. I don't see his, I wouldn't be surprised if he hit, I think he's gonna hit closer to 270 for the most part. And I just, the skill set, and that for, it's really about that skill set in the fourth round or in the fifth round even. I'm looking for speed still, or I'm looking for starting pitching. I'm not looking for a power bat with a good batting average. Like he had a 368 BABIP. Mm-hmm. Like that's not going to sustain for him. That's not his skill set. Now he has shown consistent improvement in his plate discipline. He doesn't steal bases though. He's only a 30 home run bat with an inflated BABIP. I don't see it. Now the BABIP will be a little higher if he can sustain these line drive rate has been elite for Riley for pretty much his whole career as a pro. And as long as he can sustain that elite line drive rate, it'll help the BABIP and help the batting average play up. But there's just, I think the skill set, I think it's really just a skill set thing for me more than anything. Above average swinging strike rate, above league average O swing. So he shows a willingness to chase and obviously swing and miss in the zone while making lower than league average contact rates. So I think there's regression, like obviously regression is already built into most people's minds. But that's why I mentioned it. Would anybody be surprised if Riley hit 255 after I just told you he's below league average in contact while being above league average and swing and miss in the zone and swing strike rate and O swing, that combination can lead to batting average issues. So if he hit 250 and had 30 plus home runs, that's pretty much Arenado. And I could just wait and get Arenado. I do think Riley has the better ceiling at this point for batting average. That's why I understand he's ahead of him. I rank Riley ahead of Arenado too, but not two or three rounds ahead of him.
No, I totally get that. Like, looking at Arenado, the consistency he brings going that much later is quite intriguing. Like, the appeal of Riley, it's the whole I want to draft for the ceiling because I want to win an overall compared to the opposite type situation. It could be the conversation to have him play there, but I just wanted to talk it out instead of just seeing a Twitter tweet about it, because it is interesting. It's nothing against Riley per se. It's more the price point, which dictates a lot of our decisions when we're talking about these players. The last player I wanted to discuss, I've hinted at him a million times on the show, is Josh Donaldson, because you opened my eye when you tweeted about him. So then I started digging in even more, and I got very intrigued by what I saw with Josh Donaldson, because he's going, I mentioned it earlier, he is the 19th third baseman at pick 223 after Jaime Canalario, right in front of Eugenio Suarez, Gavin Biggio. He's going well after, like 25 picks after Matt Chapman. And, like, not that I don't like Matt Chapman, I get it, I really do, but Josh Donaldson hit 247 last year. He's usually a 250-ish, high 250s, into even 280, 290s at times. The power is legit, only 26 home runs. I'll let you have the floor in a second, but things that stood out to me is everyone said he's injury prone. No, Luke Voigt's injury prone. Josh Donaldson's played in 135 or more games in six of the last eight full seasons with at least 543 at-bats, which is pretty good at that point in the draft. He also has great OBP skills. The biggest things that stood out to me this past year, a 268 BABIP, which is insane for Josh Donaldson, for a guy that hits the ball as hard as he does, barrels the ball as much as he does, barrels per plate appearance, third best in baseball this past year. And I was tweeting Mike yesterday trying to get numbers on ground ball exit velocities. Josh Donaldson was a 90.4 mile per hour exit velocity. If you just do the basis with no plate appearance recommendations, that's 20th in baseball. If you do it with 2,000 pitches, which is basically your regulars, your Vlad Guerreros, your Stantons, your Judges, the big boys, he was 8th in baseball. So he hits the ball hard. It's not that he was fluky. I ask you, are you buying back in on Josh Donaldson? Because between a drop in home run to fly ball and a ridiculous BABIP, I see no reason why he should not bounce back next year.
Yeah, that's why I said he's a very intriguing corner infield position, because I understand the risk is there, but the same risk was there for Justin Turner going earlier than him last year. And Justin Turner continues to go earlier than him. And I understand Turner has that floor of a batting average. I don't think the power is as elite. Obviously, we talked, you mentioned it. So Donaldson's a guy that I have none of. I can't sit here and say, oh, I'm in on him when I haven't gotten him. But I don't think I'm out is the point. Like, I'm willing to take him. I think where he went, I was eyeing him, because we're all talking about how bad third base is. Why are we going to eliminate yet another option at third base?
Bingo. that's the whole point of this conversation. That's why I opened my eyes, and I'm sitting there going, we're knocking this dude because he's old and injury prone. Sure, he's old. He's 36. I get that. 12th MLB season. He's not injury prone compared to what people say. He went on the IL once last year. That was early in the season. I remember it very, very clearly. Double in his first at bat, pulled up lame with a hamstring. He battled injuries off and on, but he never missed more than like three or four games in a row at all. Like, he was out there more often than not playing baseball.
Now, is he better in daily leagues? Probably. More than likely, absolutely. That's probably not even much of an argument. But again, that's neither here nor there when, again, third base is bad. Like, it's Josh, like, looking at ADP, because I have it pulled up as well. You mentioned Candelario, Eugenio Suarez, Kevin Biggio, Jonathan Villar. These are guys that are going in that range just behind him or just ahead of him, Matt Chapman, Eduardo Escobar. Are we sure Escobar is going to play every day in that offense? You think he is, but they have so many of those guys that they just plug and play. But regardless, I'm not sure Escobar is, like, other than health, it's like, I think that's where you, I think Donaldson belongs closer to Escobar type of thing. And yet he's being passed on. Like, I have no interest in Suarez. I have no interest in Biggio. If I miss on third base early, like, why not? Like, there's worse ways to fall back. Yeah, again, I understand there's injury risk, but you can, first base being so deep, you're getting Donaldson as a backup short third baseman / corner infielder, and you're more than likely to find a late round corner infielder that you could plug in if or when Donaldson gets hurt in these deeper formats as well. So if you're, as long as you draft Donaldson as a backup third baseman / corner infielder, you can feel, again, I fall back, I'm just going by example here, I got Brian Anderson really late, and I think he's going to decent 250, 20 home run guy type of thing. Jesus Aguilar, I got him, another corner infielder late. These are guys that you can get to backfill for for the corner infield spot for when Josh Donaldson misses time, and there's still first baseman available well into the round 30 areas that are going to be playing. Like right now, I don't want to share names because we're literally both about to pick again next round, but you get my point. There are first basemen right now you can look at either in the minor leagues or even at the pro level that are going to get at bats and be able to cover any missed time that Donaldson gives you. So why are we harping on a guy that's going to miss time so late when you're able to get him where you're able to get him? He's able to provide you a solid power skill set at a position that has no depth.
He's going to be able to provide you four categories, like pretty good too.
At least three and a half.
I think he'll hit for average. I think the power back to 30 plus, barring a catastrophic injury, because the home run to fly ball decrease was mind boggling. Like I know we said X stats aren't the end all be all, but I like looking at them just because when you see a BABIP being so crazy low, the XBA was like 268. So that's a 20 point shift. So say we get 255, that's good. But the home runs, he should have hit 30 plus homers in like every ballpark. He got just, you know, some rough luck. It happens from time to time because none of his stuff changed. The directions he hits the ball, the ground ball, fly balls, those are all pretty much in line. His line drives were off the roof, or off the chart. Like, those were great. But, like, and even his exit velocity.
Yeah, his play discipline. Great too.
His average exit velocity on fly balls was one of the best of his career. So it's just everything points to come in, and it's not me just saying go draft him. Like you said, it's like I'm not making it a point to draft him, but I think it's a great option, and he's 50 picks after Justin Turner. Tell me why you shouldn't take, you know, a Josh Donaldson over a Justin Turner. It makes no sense to me at all. He's going to have Buxton. He's going to have Jorge Polanco. There's going to be guys there around him still to make things happen.
Absolutely. That's why it's like, and even if you want to take Turner ahead of him, I think they should be in the same conversation at the very least, and they're not, and that's kind of the point.
Yeah, that's the whole point of like these early drafts, kind of seeing guys that stand out. And that's why I like preferably writing about those. Like you're doing the same thing. I'll write about these guys later in the draft, like not saying you have to draft them, but open your mind to this is why they should be in the conversation. Like they're not just garbage to throw away type thing. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do some listener questions as I can hear my little one is not having this anymore. But Richard Sands asks, how early would you take Will Smith? What about Dalton Varsho? We kind of talked about him. We mentioned Varsho's going around pick 100. Let me pull catchers back up because Will Smith's going about, you know, pick 68. How early would you go on those two?
Smith is going about 68 because of Waxman. Every draft I'm in with him, he takes him like in the fifth round. But yeah, see, I'm those top three I'm probably out on. I don't like taking a catcher that early. Not saying there's not an advantage to having a catcher early, but if I'm taking a catcher early, I also don't want, like, that means I'm probably not taking a relief pitcher early. I feel like it's weird. Like, I'm weird like that. So I like Varsho's price. I really do. I probably will land myself some Varsho because, like, again, I like his price compared to the other three, and I can kind of see him grouped. He's below them in my tiers, but he's kind of right on the edge of being in that conversation for me. So if I can get somebody I feel is on the edge of that conversation, 40 picks on average behind the last one in that conversation, I'm good with Varsho's price. It was Smith, I still feel like a little rich for my liking, but I get it because I think he belongs in that conversation with the top guys without actually costing the same as those top guys. So I'm more so understanding of it. But at the end of the day, Varsho's the only one I like in terms of that top four catcher price tag.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's the thing I'm at. Like, I love Real Muto. I love Salvi. I like these guys. I'm just where they're going and what I want for my structure, the way I feel comfortable drafting a team. It's not fitting where Varsho I like. And that's why, and then Varsho goes. So I end up with a lot of Grandal because Varsho goes. And that's just the way it ends up happening. But I won't probably have any Will Smith. And it's nothing against Will Smith. I'm very, very similar to what you said. I don't know. Like, I like him, but I'm not in love with him. If that makes sense. So it's tough to go for sure. Well, Matt Goodwin,
you said it so simply. I sat here try giving reasoning. You just said I like him, but I don't love him. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I don't love him. That's it. Yeah.
Like, there's just like, and that's the thing is when we talk ADP, we look like, okay, that was catcher ADP we have pulled up. Sometimes peel it back. It's back to where I said, look at the full draft board. Go to the full page of ADP and look what else is going around him, and see where that would shape your team up type situation. And that kind of changes things. When you're picking through it. Matt Goodwin asks a question. What are mid and late round starting pitching targets that could outperform strikeouts for general performance projections, expectations, Mr. Mike Curlin?
Yeah, he brought, I talked about how I wasn't ready. My least prepped position is pitcher. So mid round guy, someone I've recently got in on, and I wish I drafted him in this league. He was actually at the top of my queue when he went, so I didn't get him. Was Luis Garcia of the Astros, 25 years old, kind of flashed a little bit. You know, the ERA was in the mid threes last year with everything behind it suggesting it was legit. 28 games started, 155 innings. I like seeing that. What caught my attention was the above average swinging strike rate and the above average O swing. Not a ton above average, but both above league average while inducing below league average contact across the board. So there's swing and miss potential there, and I think there's a next level to his potential in strikeouts if he can build off of this the season. So he's the one name I'm for sure like have FOMO on right now, and a guy that I'm moving up my draft board to try to get a few shares.
Yeah, I like the Luis Garcia call quite a bit. That's one thing I look at when I'm taking these later round pitching targets. It's who are guys that have that strikeout upside that if they're going to like be the best ratio guys, who can we go after? I think Luis Garcia is a very, very good one for sure. Mike Carter asked a question. The doc is in the house. Who are a couple of off-the-radar hitter prospects you'll be looking at carefully this spring?
You want me to answer? I got a couple.
Go for it, and I'll follow up after you.
Two quick ones. There's a few of them, actually, but two of them I like a lot. Josh Lowe of the Rays. Power, speed, played plenty in the upper levels last year. Should be up quick, rather early, I would think, this year, if not break camp with the team. And that skill set is very intriguing. Better in OBP leagues, but overall, there's a power-speed combination there, and he's going late in drafts. And another one going like outside the top four. I think he's like 380-something. 387 since December 1st, I think it was. And then another one going outside the top like 500, which he's still available in our drafts. I'm all over Seth Beer again for like the third straight year. I'm sick of it. I've been chasing the Seth Beer dragon for three seasons now. And
to be fair, you should have had it last year before he got hurt. Like he was starting to hit. It was coming.
Well, yeah, he was coming around, and he has the minor league track record in terms of solid plate discipline, decent power, nothing special, but he just feels like a solid, safe option. And how late you're getting him, plus an NLD again, NLDH. I think he's one of the bigger benefactors for the D-backs because he could fit that role right away. He's a guy that just how late he's going, I tend to fall into a bunch of shares of him. Again, he's still available, so now Bubba's probably going to jump him on me, but it's okay.
I like that pick.
I don't blame you. I think I got him in the first draft, too. I have to look, but I think I got him in my last DC. But he's a guy that not only will he play DH, obviously, if there's an NLDH, but a guy that probably plays first base a little bit or gets a little bit position eligibility somewhere. Right now, he's only UT only, so that is a problem for fantasy. But where you're getting them, it's not a problem because you're going to need anybody who has a pulse at one point.
Yeah, no, I like that Seth Beer call a lot. A couple that I have out there, and they're popular ones, but that I'm very intrigued with is Josh Jung. Like, do we get him coming early in the season? Because I think that power is legit. So obviously we want those at-bats. If he could play even three quarters of the season, I wouldn't be shocked if we see 25 to 30 home runs from Josh Jung. So I'm intrigued with him. Another guy that you can get later at third base if you're wanting to roll the dice there. And then one that just went a few picks, like maybe like last round in our draft, Nick Prado. Very intrigued by Nick Prado. That hit tool is legit. I remember seeing him during the draft season a couple years ago, and I was very intrigued by him. And then with the developments we saw him make last year in the minors, like everyone talks Bobby Witt, and for good reason, obviously. But Nick Prado is awesome. Like this kid's good. This is a team that's rebuilding, and I know they kind of played the game, but if the CBA gets rid of these like, you know, year things with these young kids, Prado could easily have a nice role this next year as well. So he's definitely intriguing to me.
And one last one I want to mention that because catcher's so bad, MJ Melendez just won the home run derby.
Another Kansas City Royal.
Yep. Dude, Royals are loaded with guys that are just intriguing, especially late round options, because these are guys that should possibly break camp. Problem is where's Melendez going to play with Salvi? Yeah. Like,
does Salvi go to DH full time?
Yeah. And then that goes into, let's look into Salvi as a DH. Does he hit well as a DH? Does that hurt him now that he's not playing the field? Because Salvi plays like 130 games in the field every year. Somehow his knees hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know how he does it, but you know, just catchers in general that are fun to take chances on late in drafts. But it's playing time. Like you mentioned Melendez, Luis Capistrano of San Diego. Like if he can play every day, that could be fun.
Four catchers there.
Yeah. That's the problem. Like, they wouldn't trade it for Jorge Alfaro. I'm like, God, what are you
doing?
That's
a third catcher. Caratini. Yeah. Alfaro, Nola, and Capistrano.
It sucks because like I'd love to see him play with the question marks on playing time. Cal Raleigh of Seattle.
They're gonna trade. I'm telling you, the Padres and the Mariners are gonna trade a catcher.
Because yeah, they'll probably trade Cal Raleigh for Luis Campusano, and we're still screwed.
Although I can see Texas getting one, so I need to figure out this backup catcher situation quick. Because yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Texas goes out and gets a catcher because they're trying to push, obviously. Anyway.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good young catchers. I love the Melendez call. The dude's awesome. Yeah, if you haven't seen the Home Run Derby thing, go look it up. It's impressive. Our buddy Art from Triple Play Fantasy. Love you guys. How do you rate Trevor Story for 2022? That is he location dependent for you?
Oh, no. He's a clear cut. Like third round, he's my target every draft so far. Like the first draft, I took Tim Anderson over him, and I realized I didn't like that. And that's why early drafting matters, too, because I didn't do my ranks yet, and I realized I'm going to rank Story ahead of him. So I actually have Story as my fourth shortstop, just behind the big three in Turner, Tatis, and Bichette. Then I have Story ahead of Anderson, Bogaerts, and Baez. So I'm really in on Story. I'm taking him every chance I can.
Yeah, you took him in round three of this draft. So I definitely, yep. I don't mind it. I think he's a steal compared to where he used to go. Because the biggest thing is maybe he loses some home runs like he did last year. But he's going to run. He's going to run.
He has actually more career stolen bases on the road.
Yeah, which makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. So I can see that one playing out for sure. Any final thoughts, my friend? That wraps up listener questions. That wraps up so much. I know we could talk for hours, but I don't know if everybody wants to hear all that conversation, and we'd like to keep doing podcasts in the future. So I don't know if we should do that, but any final thoughts?
No, man, just this was a lot of fun. It's been a while since I've been on a podcast other than my own, and it's been it's fun to play the guest and not feeling guilty when I cut people off because seriously, I just appreciate you having me on, Bubba. I do appreciate the friendship we've been able to form over because of fantasy baseball. And does Lars Nootbaar get playing time this year?
Yeah, James DeVigrillo asks, Mike, does Lars Nootbaar get playing time this year? I'm curious because that's why I've been so hesitant to click draft button with him.
I'm curious because I'm going to pull up the roster real quick. Well, it was this because you have Nootbaar, who's a lefty, which is good for him. But you have Yepez, who's gaining all this hype. You still have DeJong on the roster, on the bench. DH would help open a slot up. But, I mean, it's hard to see a clear path to those at-bats because if Yepez is everything people think he's going to be or takes that step forward, he just takes that DH spot. And I feel like we always see the Cardinals in on somebody randomly we're not expecting. So the Cardinals could go out and sign somebody to be the DH. Like if the Cardinals went out and grabbed Soler because they get a discount, I wouldn't be surprised.
No
one. And I would hate it, but I wouldn't be surprised. So it's one of those things that I want to say yes, but I'm not as confident. Like I know our buddy John L. Tweeted the other day. He's actually pretty confident in it, but I don't see a clear path. So I think we see some, but it's gonna be as like a fourth outfield type slash. If he gets hot and takes over DH, sure, but I don't feel confident saying that's gonna happen.
Obviously where he's going is on an expensive price, so it's just one injury is all it takes, mm-hmm. and he could run with it, and we've seen Cardinals guys do this so many times in the outfield, so many times. So anything's possible, but at this moment in time I'm with you, it's hard to see. I would be less surprised if he was a piece of a trade to get like pitching or something that's something I could see happening, and then that could open up playing time because they sent him to the Arizona Fall League to showcase him, I think, not to actually get him more reps.
I mean, so look what happened late. Look, they freed Lane Thomas, and we got the best of them. So
they always have maybe... That's the running joke. All the outfielders, you got Arozarena. There's like a long list of Cardinals outfielders that have thrived outside of St. Louis. So
maybe Lars is the guy. But like you mentioned, the price tag there isn't one really. I think he's worth a gamble, but most leagues you can just leave him on your watch list. Dynasty leagues, he's a cheap buy low. There's little risk, and there is reward there. It's just I don't know if I see a path to clear at bats. Again, all depending on how Yepez looks, because there's so many people high on him. I haven't dug into him yet to see the appeal, but there's a reason why there's a lot of smart people saying his name this offseason. Mm-hmm. So that gives me pause. Not to mention, DeJong might not be the done. I almost made the whole show without making a stupid comment.
That's fine. I'm good at those too. That's good. It's fair. But on that note, we're going to wrap things up here.
Yes.
I do appreciate you joining me. It's always fun having you on the show. It's been a while, so we'll have to make it happen again. Our crazy schedules make things difficult from time to time, but we got it in, which is most important, and we have about 20 more rounds to draft, which will be fun to text back the screw you for taking this guy scenarios and whatnot. But and then we'll battle the pods before you know it. So that's just right around the corner. But everybody, make sure you check out skplaybook.com. Lots of great stuff there. Lots more coming your way to get you ready for the 2022 season. The Bases Loaded podcast, as also with Jorge Montanez, Georgie. getting it done there. Rotoballer.com. Much, much more from Mr. Mike Kirlin, who is on Twitter at Mike_Kirlin. Mike, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you for having me. Good, sir.
Everybody's Bench with Bubba, episode 425. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.